News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 19th of March, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, all kinds of interesting things. We'll be talking about stuff we did during the week, stuff we didn't do during the week. What?
One thing I got to say.
Uh-oh.
No, this is a good thing.
Oh, this is a good thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely have to go to see Lion King. If anybody hasn't seen it, definitely get your tickets and go.
We saw it in Toronto. It was wonderful.
Well, this is the first time I've seen it here. You know, I mean, I've been to quite a few Broadway plays, but this Lion King really did a fantastic job. Unbelievable. And he's, you know, Darth Vader there, you know, was the originator of it. And unbelievable. I mean, it was really a good play. If you get a chance, go and see it.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. Well, for those of you in many branches of Christianity, it's St. Joseph's Day. Personally, I'm looking forward to the St. Joseph's bread. It's a kind of an eggy, thick, heavy bread. It's very delicious.
Sort of orangish looking?
Yeah.
Like St. Joseph aspirin?
Yeah.
I thought it was St. Joseph's wort.
Yeah. More importantly, it's La Festa di San Giuseppe in Italy. We used to celebrate that every year. It's very wonderful.
Tomorrow's spring.
Tomorrow's the first day of spring. You can tell because
it's snowy now,
snowy,
right?
It's snowing. We have snow, and that's okay. We had a great winter. I can't argue. I really can't argue. We had a terrific winter. Not a problem.
I was talking to one of my distributors.
Uh-oh.
And I said, so how's the weather? He goes, well, we had kind of a real cold spell. I go, wait a minute, Donnie. Define cold spell. Well, it got down in the 50s.
Yeah.
And Donnie, that's a heat wave for us up here.
So you want that button on the phone that says smack.
Yeah.
With the wind chill yesterday, it was down to like 10 degrees.
Yeah, it was cold. Years ago, before my arthritis got so bad, I couldn't really walk that much distance, and why I walk with a cane now. I used to walk home from work every day, a couple of miles every day. The first day I did it, I'm walking home and I'm thinking, man, I'm freezing. I can't take this. It's not that I'm out of shape. I'm not used to the cold and blah, blah, blah. And I'm walking home. I'm listening to the radio on the headphones, and I get about a block and a half from my house, and I hear the weather comes on and goes, blah, 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 blah. And with the wind chill, it's 15 below zero. I froze in my tracks. I couldn't move another inch.
Cover any exposed areas.
As long as you don't know, it's okay.
Exactly. The minute I knew how cold it really was, I was done.
That's what they call mind over matter.
Yes, exactly. If you
don't
mind,
it
doesn't
matter.
Right. We have to tell you that there's a popular piece of software that a lot of retailers use to control credit card or debit card transactions, maybe storing sensitive customer information, including their PIN codes. Two versions of a cash register software program made by Fujitsu Transaction Solutions are being looked at, according to a warning Visa issued to the companies that process credit card transactions. The Visa representatives have confirmed that the warning was indeed sent. Best Buy, Staples, and Office Max are among those who use the software. And what they're saying is that when you swipe your card and put in your PIN code, it actually saves that information in their databases. In the last couple of months, Bank of America, Washington Mutual, and Citibank have replaced more than 200,000 debit cards and have told customers that thieves got vital debit card information as a result of a security breach at one large merchant. So things are getting a little weird out there for those of us with credit cards and debit cards, which I would suspect is pretty much everybody listening to the sound of my voice at this moment.
We've had kind of the reverse problem at our store. Our software specifically doesn't store credit card numbers because, you know, that's the law now.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And we've had customers call up and, you know, they want to order something. Well, just bill it to the last credit card I gave you. Well, we can't do that. We need you to give us the card again. And they're mad at us.
Right. Yeah. I get that on Ask Nick. AskNick.com.
Ding.
Thank you. Very good. He was a little slow. Everybody got there. People pay $15 a year to be part of Ask Nick. And, of course, I can do that by credit card. Mm-hmm. And I don't get the credit card numbers. PayPal does, and they don't keep them either. And the reason they don't is for just what you said. Yep. It's against the law to do so we don't. And I get people all the time who write to me. I send them explicit instructions. Click this button, you know, go here, do this. I give them a link in the email I send them when their time is up. And I get mail after mail saying, why don't you just bill me the same credit card number? I don't keep it. That's for your safety.
Yep. No, so, you can't. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of that going on. A lot of people who are starting to give up on that stuff. They're not doing any credit card saving. When you buy Ask Nick, I don't get your credit card number, and I certainly don't keep your credit card number. And that's, I think, very important for people to know. So anyway, if you're a Visa credit card holder, I would check with. I suppose it's just not Visa, not just Visa. Visa are the
All
ones
of them,
who,
yeah.
who admitted it. Yeah. You might want to call up your bank and see how they feel about this and what they're planning to do about it, because you got to trust a lot of these retailers anyway. If you're going to use your credit card number, it's going to be out there, but you need to be aware of that and to be prepared for it and to keep checking your statements. That's, I think, the big one.
A lot of folks don't realize it, but they can go online now and once a year get a free credit report.
But even before that, you can, with most banks now, you can check your bank statements every hour.
Right.
And you know, at the end of the day, make sure all the charges that you posted that day show up and charges you didn't post.
But the thing of it is, though, they're opening up other charge cards.
Right. And, they're doing that as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
what you can do is all you can do. So so be a little more careful, and we'll see what we can do about that. Okay, we're going to go to the phones now. Our first caller is Phil from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I got a question. I'm having some problems with my web browsing.
Uh-huh.
I use Mozilla, and I've got Zone Alarm as my firewall.
Uh-huh.
But what happens is, after I've been using the computer, and I shut stuff down, and I let the computer sit for a while, if I go back into Thunderbird or into Firefox to open it up,
mm-hmm.
it's telling me it's not reading it. And I use FrontierNet. I'm on their DSL service. And I'm not sure where I need to be pointing to try to figure out why the system's locked.
What's the exact error message?
Well, it just tells me that it's not reading either it's not reading the server information through Mozilla or through Thunderbird, and it's not reading the FrontierNet server. I've got to restart the computer up, and then it goes back through all the boot up sequences, and then it works
What
fine.
Version of Windows are you running?
XP.
Service Pack 2?
Yeah, I've got all the updates.
Yep.
Have you checked in the control panel under energy saving and made sure all your energy options are turned off? Because one of them is to spin down the hard drive.
Ah, okay.
And the minute you spin that down, you know, the machine's still working, but with the Service Pack 2 in that, it just does a lousy job. I turn them all off because, again, Microsoft trying to do what they really don't do best, and they screwed it up, and it causes problems with the machine.
And you know what? I think I do remember doing some stuff with energy savings, and this might have happened right after that. So
check and see, and make sure they're all turned off.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do instead of rebooting your entire system is you can open up a DOS prompt window and type. Oh dear, is it IF or IP? I always get the two confused because one is for
IP config.
IP config. IP config space. The forward slash, which is the divide by key under the question mark.
Right.
Renew.
You got to do
a release first.
You got to do
/release, and then /ipconfig/renew.
Yep.
And that'll release. What that does is, what's likely happening actually. This is a known Service Pack 2 problem. What happens is when you connect to the internet, the server at the other end says, oh, in order to be on the internet, you have to have an internet address. We'll give you this one. and they lease it to you for a certain amount of time.
Right.
When that lease expires, your system is supposed to renew the lease. A number of machines, once Service Pack 2 gets installed, don't renew the lease every time. And I'm not entirely certain yet why. And there's no fix for it. But doing an ipconfig /release releases all of the lease information from your system, and /renew makes it like it's brand new again and gets a lease all over again. So that would reconnect you to the internet without having to reboot your whole system.
So it's, so go to the DOS prompt. It's IP...
Config, C-O-N-F-I-G.
Okay.
IP for Internet Protocol, config, which is short for configuration, and that's all one word. IP config, space, the /release, and then the same again with /renew.
A little easier and a little quicker than rebooting the whole computer.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Okay, before we go on, I have to say this.
My wife
is a very funny woman. And she does She puts up with me, and she does computer humor. We were watching Discovery Channel this week, and we were watching How William Shatner Changed the World, all about how
people were inspired
by Star Trek to create certain things. And we're watching the segment where this guy is...
How William Shatner Changed the World?
Yeah.
Hosted by William Shatner.
Yeah, it's really about Star Trek and how people were inspired by... The guy who invented the cell phone says he took the whole idea from the communicator. That's why they flip. You know, that sort of thing. And they're just talking about how people, scientists who discovered or built or invented things actually were inspired to do so by Star Trek.
And there was a guy that thinks he's invented warp drive. He's got the math out.
He's got the math.
He can warp space now.
But my favorite was we're watching and there's this guy who's implanted chips in himself so he can control devices over the internet. And he's saying that in 20 years his brain will be wired up and he'll be controlling the internet. And my wife turned to me and said, "Ooh, I hope he's not using Windows."
True.
Microsoft presents Brain 2.0 Service Pack 3. I don't even ever want to hear that ever.
Could you imagine then get infested with a virus or something?
I'll tell you what, my brain...
wind up finding these people crashing into walls.
Exactly. My brain would be all open source. I'll tell you that right now. All right. Boom, boom. Thank you. We'll be here all week. Try the deal. Lori from Webster. Welcome, Lori. What's your question? Lori, are you...
I have a question regarding static versus a dynamic IP address in regards to transmission of patient files or electronic claims for patients over the internet.
Sure.
Frontier is telling me that I need one over the other. I don't remember which one it is, but one of them cost about $45 more a month to have, but they say that you need it so that other people cannot get their hands on the information.
The static IP.
That's not exactly correct. The static IP gives your computer a single address that never changes.
Right.
Most of the time when you connect into the internet, your address changes every time. Okay. The only reason you need a static address is if you are running a server that other people are logging into from the rest of the internet.
Especially any of your dental software or insurance software.
Okay.
If someone's logging into you, you need a static address.
Or if the system you're logging to at the other end verifies you by your IP address.
Okay.
To prove that you are allowed to log into them.
Right. In other words, I can create a system that says only the people from this list of internet addresses can log in.
Okay.
If that's the case, then you absolutely need a static IP address. Otherwise, you may get a different one the next time you turn your machine on, and therefore you would be unable to get to that server you're trying to get to.
And one other thing, Lori, just to ask you. You know, does your software company from time to time want to get into your machine and do updates?
Well, that's what I'm trying to decide. If that is a difference on there of getting this, then I may not allow them to, because I just don't think, you know, paying that fee every month would be worth it.
Yeah.
But that's the reason that they have to do it. And, of course, every service provider, not just Frontier, but every service provider prefers to give you dynamic addresses for the very simple reason that we just finished talking about with the last caller. This is a nice theme so far tonight. Today. The deal here is there are only a limited number of Internet addresses that are given to any Internet service provider like Frontier.
Okay.
So when they have people logging in, they want to dynamically give them the next free one.
Okay.
So that they don't, you know, if you've got, you may have, you know, 20 million customers, I don't know, and these I'm making these numbers up. You may have 20 million customers, but only 15 million addresses. Well, since most of them aren't on 24/7, you don't necessarily need to do that if you're dial-up. Now, if you're broadband, you're going to be on 24/7 anyway. But even so, they much prefer to use dynamic rather than static.
It's kind of like the phone number issue. We've run out of phone numbers and had to make new area codes.
Right.
So the same thing's happening on the Internet.
We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When we were kids.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the phones in a minute, but you should know that the next generation DVD products are coming down the pike. HD DVD and Blu-ray disc optical disc drive formats are coming. The two formats are rivals vying against each other.
Completely incompatible with each other.
Yeah. And completely incompatible. The HD DVD backers are Toshiba, NEC, and Intel. Blu-ray is, of course, Sony, since they invented it, Panasonic, and Samsung. Sony's first Blu-ray disc player will be available in the U.S. in July, starting at about $1,000.
Now, which is what VCRs cost and
like
the
anything,
first DVD players before
like
that.
New.
Why would you pay $1,000 for one of these? Well, for one reason, you'll be able to use them to write 25 or 50 gigabytes of data onto them. The 25 gigabyte discs will be about 20 or 25 bucks, and the 50 gigabyte discs will be about 48 or 60 bucks.
Like anything else, you wait a little time, they'll get cheap, so will the media.
But somebody has to buy them now, so they will get cheap later.
Right, and there are people for whom the ability to back up 50 gigabytes of data is worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for what they're doing, and they look pretty nifty. Of course, you'll also be able to back up all kinds of other things on it. I can't imagine what those would be, but you will be able to. On a completely unrelated note, HD DVD titles will be available from places like Warner Home Video and other places. So they'll be bringing those out pretty soon.
Better quality, higher resolution, larger sizes. Yeah.
High density, or HDTV, high definition.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be 1080 lines of resolution as opposed to 540. Progressive scan, blah, 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 all those things that that you TV geeks want to know about. So those things are coming out, and they'll be available pretty soon. So watch for that. What it means is next year we'll be able to buy them for half that price, and in 2 years they'll be giving them away like they do the other ones now.
I was going to say, like, at Christmas, they'll probably be down to a couple $100.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Phil from Honeyoy, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
The question is how do I get to have Stinger, AdAware, and SpyBot run automatically?
Stinger is just a utility. It doesn't run automatically, and you don't need it.
Oh.
Once your antivirus software is updated. And Stinger, AdAware, and SpyBot, you've got to pay then for the professional versions.
Right. If you buy the professional, the commercial versions of SpyBot and AdAware, they will run automatically at a
And they have a real time watching program.
Yeah.
So that it prevents the things from getting in the first place.
For free, you do it by hand. If you pay them, it does it for you.
So the schedule task wizard wouldn't do it?
Might. But likely wouldn't because it wouldn't update.
Right, and especially
SpyBot. And you do have to do that by hand.
Oh, yeah.
Because with SpyBot, you got to sit there and download it and then immunize it. And...
Right. So, yeah, it won't quite work.
Oh, okay.
All righty.
Thanks.
There you go. Our pleasure. Our next caller, Rich from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I love the show.
Thank you.
I call as often as I can because there's always a problem with Windows, as you know.
Really?
Yeah, I've said this time and time again. God bless Bill Gates. If it wasn't for him, I'd be an out-of-work actor.
Well, here's the thing. I do the Tango, and I have Adware and SpyBot and SpySweeper and Norton Internet Security 2006 and all the latest updates. But despite all of that, I contracted some malware or spyware, which I just couldn't get rid of it. I even took the drive out and put it in another machine, which was clean, and ran Norton and the other anti-spyware stuff on it, and mm-hmm. I found a couple of things here and there, but as soon as I boot the machine up, another 15, 20 minutes, and bang, it's back again. It just reinstalls itself, and away it goes. And
when you're doing the Adware and SpyBot, you're doing it on all the identities?
All the identities?
Yes.
I guess I never knew there was a setting for that in there.
There isn't. You have to log in to each username separately and run the whole
thing. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I've always
That's been... why.
It's hiding. How many login IDs do you have on that machine?
Well, there's just mine and the administrator, and I guess there's one other ASP.NET that gets installed when you install.
Yeah, ASP.NET you don't have to log into, but the other two you have to run the whole Tango in each of them.
I see.
And the other problem is your machine may scan clean. Adware and SpyBot say you're clean. You log back into the internet, go to a website, and more spyware downloads.
Right.
Yep.
The other thing you might want to try, just for grins and giggles, is to try using a different antivirus software.
Okay.
Norton Internet Suite has been causing some problems lately, and I might suggest at least that you try something different.
I found even Norton Antivirus 2006 updated, is missing stuff, versus AVG catches it.
Right, and you can get a free version of AVG at free.grisoft.com, so give that a try and let us know if that works. Our next caller, Dave from Rush, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Okay, I have XP Home. By the way, you guys are going to help me with Family Unity today.
Oh, good for us.
All right. XP Home, there's four users, all four administrators, and the problem is with the desktop wallpaper. So two of the users seem to be independent, and they can put whatever wallpaper up they want.
Mm-hmm.
But two of the others seem to be linked in some way, and the two are my son and my wife. So my son likes his orcs on there, and my wife likes puppies and kittens. So each time they switch from one to another, it's putting up the same wallpaper that the other person put on. And they don't like that.
Each wallpaper should be independent.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they should. Why would they be linked? Have you tried creating a new user for one of them?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I have not tried that.
Try that and see if, in fact, that solves the problem. Windows, there are just so many whacked things in Windows.
that's an understatement.
That are a mystery to those of us who didn't actually write it, and sometimes even to them. The simplest way is to avoid the problem altogether by creating a new user.
And then how do I move all of their documents from, or one of their documents?
Well, you got it.
Well, since everybody's an administrator, which, by the way, is not that good an idea.
Yeah,
but since everybody's an administrator, you should be able to read everybody else's stuff and just pull it over. Or you can create a shared folder.
Right, I have that.
And then copy it all into there as one person and copy it all out as the other person.
Yeah, okay. Under it's, if you go into Explorer under Documents and Settings,
mm-hmm.
you will see his name there. And if you click on the plus sign there, then there's the group of desktop.
Okay.
You can copy that desktop folder from one to the other.
Okay.
Once you create the new name.
Yep. All right. We'll give that a shot.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you much.
Sure.
Bye.
Yeah. Of course, the other solution is to give everyone their own computer.
Right. It's a good solution. Let me reiterate that letting anybody run as the administrator on a daily basis is a really, 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 really bad idea. Going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Now back to Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this, indeed, is Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, let me just quickly talk about Gmail. As we all know, Gmail is Google's mail system. Gigabytes worth of mail, read it on the web, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. The Federal Trade Commission had a lawsuit where they sent a subpoena to Google for the complete contents of a Gmail account, including deleted email messages. So much for the delete forever button in Gmail. The Justice Department itself has their own subpoena to Google for search terms and excerpts from its search database. The judge granted the subpoena and ordered that all emails, including deleted ones, be divulged. So if you're using your Gmail account, you should be aware that none of that is as secure or as safe or as private as you might think. Now, I know there is a delete button, but Google's privacy policy does say that deleted email messages may remain in our offline backup systems in perpetuity. It does not guarantee that backups are ever deleted.
Which is good if you accidentally delete something.
Yeah.
Well, right. But so you do need to be aware that in things like Gmail, well, in any email system, folks, the reality is it doesn't go away. You know, for heaven's sake, G. Gordon Liddy and I can't think of the other guy's name found that out. You got to be careful of those things. You may not care. You may not have any information that you care whether everybody knows. But it is important to remember that what you say in email lives forever. You know, I wrote things on the web back in the late 70s and early 80s that come back to haunt me. You got to be careful what you say online.
Because it can travel to so many different areas. I mean, it's just not your computer.
And it stays
ISP.
There forever. You can go back and find all that stuff forever.
Google yourself. It's really scary sometimes.
Sometimes, late at night when I'm alone, I Google myself. All right, our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Get me out of here.
How you doing, Nick?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. Got a question on backing up data. I've never backed up data in the past, and have been fortunate not to have a computer crash. But
I just have three words for you, John. Tick, tick, tick.
Exactly. So I hear you guys talk about it all the time, and I want to back up data, but I don't know how or what medium to back it up into.
If you can afford it, the easiest and most convenient way to do it is to buy an external hard drive.
Yeah.
A little USB drive. You can get them from 20 gig on up. And just save your data. That's really all you can save legitimately anyway. So if you save your data, you should be good. A little 20 gig drive.
Save it onto a CD?
No. It's an actual hard drive.
You can use your existing CD burner or DVD burner to back up your data. Yep. It just becomes long and tedious because you have to break it into 700 meg chunks to fit on a CD.
Gotcha.
Wait for the whole thing to burn and then make another disk with the next 700 meg chunk.
Yeah,
so backing up onto hard drive is much quicker, much easier. You can get backup programs very easily that automatically just back up your changed files. So you click a button, it does all it needs to, and you're done.
Right.
All right, so if I plug in to USB, it'll show up on my desktop, and then I can back up from there.
Shows up as a drive, and you can create a routine or, you know, just copy the folders that you want, especially the documents and settings. If you're using Windows XP, that basically covers everything, both your email settings, all my docs, my pictures, yada, yada, yada. You just grab that and with the folder in there after your name, and you've got it backed up.
Your bookmarks and everything else. As long as you haven't moved any of those default settings, that's where they all are.
Okay.
So that's a very important thing to do. Of course, another way you can do it is to, if you have a very important document you never, ever want lost or erased, email it to your Gmail account, and it'll sit there apparently forever.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. There are 100 ways you can back things up. That's just the most convenient and, I think, easiest.
And probably should mention the next step is to get a data-proof fire safe and then put your backup media in that fire safe in another building.
You want to talk about media, though? All right. I got to show you guys. I wish this was TV. Ready?
Oh, yeah, this, the new micro cards in this in cell phones. Card
is the size of a Rob, thumbnail.
Can you see this?
No, the size of your pinky nail.
Yeah, it's about the size of my thumbnail, and it's 512 meg.
Wow. That's astonishing. Listen, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. We've got Ed and Claude and Bob on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with everybody on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. One, turn your radio down. Two, turn your radio down lower. Three, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. Four, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. Five, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. Six, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And seven, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Dave and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the phones in just a moment. But first, you should know that Microsoft is now suing people who sell bootleg copies of software on eBay.
Don't!
Right now it's counterfeit copies, but next in line will be people who sell copies of software they've already installed.
Which is almost every piece of software on eBay. eBay's been finding out, and they shut them down as soon as they find them.
Yep. You can't do that. It is against the law. Microsoft is working with eBay because eBay would rather have Microsoft suing you than Microsoft suing eBay themselves. So
my sister just turned in somebody to eBay because she was looking for a front page. She wanted a copy of that. She got contacted with this one woman who was selling copies of front page and said, my sister called me and said, isn't that illegal? I said, yeah. She goes, oh, no. The woman says she thinks it's okay because she's only selling her backup copies.
Yeah, right.
It's still illegal.
Right. So you have to have a by the way, if you want to know, Microsoft has an anti-piracy hotline, 800-785-3448, which spells R-U legit.
Ooh.
1-800-R-U.
How much you want to bet the person who came up with that's making about $200,000 a year?
Legit. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. And how do you get that job? All right, our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hey, afternoon, gentlemen. Or actually, good morning. It's not quite noon yet.
That's
I had a question around hooking up an email machine. My basic system that I use for photography is running an old version of ME, but I've never had problems with it, mainly because it's never been online.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do is I was looking for a machine that basically had in the firmware the program burned into it so it would be pretty much impervious to viruses and would just be used for reading emails and doing Google searches and things of that nature. The only addition to it may be a USB port so I could perhaps use one of those little USB memory chips to do a download if there was a software upgrade or something so I could take advantage of that.
Okay, you're not actually looking for an email server. You're looking for what we call a personal computer. So what you're asking is you want a system that is impervious to viruses that you can use to do email and surfing the web and stuff.
Exactly.
We call those Macintoshes.
No, you don't, because they're not impervious.
They're not impervious.
There's nothing that's impervious. Well, your two big choices right now are Macs and Linux boxes. Both of those have limited exposure currently to viruses. And both of them do everything else you would want to be able to do. They do email and web browsing and copying files and doing all of that stuff.
What about the web TV?
I don't even think they make that anymore.
Yeah.
So the big thing, well, and he couldn't use that to do USB cards or any of that other stuff. So
every time this particular unit would be turned on, it would reboot its internal software and...
Yeah, nobody does that because you can't upgrade the software if there's a problem.
Right.
So what you need is with both Windows and Linux, excuse me, I beg your pardon, don't ever let me say that again. With both the Macintosh and Linux, you can update the operating system for when there are security updates. With the Macintosh, a number of the programs that come with it will also update during security updates With Linux, every program that comes with it will update when there are security updates. So either one of those is safer for three reasons. One, there are fewer people writing viruses for it. Secondly, the operating system and the extra programs all update. And third, they're both better written pieces of software, and particularly in terms of Linux, there's billions and billions of eyeballs on the code all the time.
And the minute something comes out, they're there usually within hours.
Yeah, Microsoft updates once a month. Apple, I don't know what their
at least once a month
lag
if not
time
more often,
is,
yeah.
and Linux updates within
hourly.
Hours.
Yeah, hourly
of a problem. Yeah.
A second part to this, and I hope I don't get you in trouble with your advertisers, but some of these free ISPs out there, I don't want to mention, maybe I shouldn't say, but like these Net Zeros or some of these other ones that supposedly advertise free internet. Now, would these machines operate with this type of ISP? Or
yes, they'll all operate
sometimes.
Mostly with most of them. Some of them, the reason they're free is you have to run a particular piece of code in your machine, and that's Windows only, that puts ads up on your screen. That's how you get it for free.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, if you're looking for inexpensive, take a look at our advertisers, Frontier being one. Mm-hmm. You can get a good, solid network connection that does everything you want to do. I personally run a Linux box on DSL, and it's happy as a pig in mud.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There
good
you
afternoon.
Go. You too. That's an interesting question and a serious problem. Everybody nowadays, you're used to Windows. You're used to having what you have, and that's understandable. I get that. But you're all smart enough. You could change your operating system if you wanted to. It wouldn't be a problem. There wouldn't be a need to really worry about that. And both the Mac and Linux are certainly better in terms of viruses and all of that other stuff. And both of them are dang pretty. The front ends are dang pretty. Mm-hmm. But in any case, whatever else you decide to do, you should be very aware that you can learn to do any of those things. Like I've said before, changing your operating system is like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. And you spend a week or two fumbling around and finding the radio, and then, like, within a couple of weeks, you forget you ever didn't know where it was. So it's not, it's not different in terms of what you're doing. It's just different in terms of where the controls are. Not a big deal. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and Mina Francesco. Rob Jason's in with the news. We're back on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what happens at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about Windows One Care, their antivirus, et cetera, software. 272 of you voted, making it number 166 on the all-time hit list, actually tying for 165. The choices, of course, were I love it, I hate it, who cares, who what, and the Macintosh. Who what, most people have never even heard of it, 57% of you, followed by 25% of you couldn't even care. 28 of you just clicked on the Macintosh, 4% of you hate it, and a lonely 9 of you love it. It has been the people who know these things have said that it's not
really...
They must
be Microsoft employees.
Yeah, they said it's not really a particularly good version of anything. It's not very robust or whatever. This week's poll comes from a news story that we had. Two Democratic senators, Mark Pryor of Arkansas and Max Baucus of Montana, have introduced a bill called Cyber Safety for Kids Act of 2006. The 11-page measure would require the U.S. Department of Commerce to work with the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which is the nonprofit organization that oversees domain names, to develop plans for a domain name system that would house material deemed mindful, harmful to minors, including the establishment of a .xxx domain for obscene websites. And they get a little graphic as to what they deem obscene. I don't think we need to talk about it here. They don't require that it's .xxx, but that's what everybody's using as the term. I suppose you could call it .porn or whatever. Anyway, the question is, should there be a .xx domain for porn? And the choices are yes, no, don't care, and, of course, the Macintosh.
Ooh.
There you go. Currently, we have 89 of you who voted. 44% of you say yes, closely followed by 39% who don't care. 12% no. And four of you are so out of touch with everything that's going on in the world today, you just clicked on the Macintosh. When you're done with that voting, by the way, take a look at the little yellow box underneath. Click on give us your opinion, and it'll take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. And you can leave an opinion, because I know that you have more of an opinion than yes, no, don't care. Or, of course, the Macintosh. And so you can go there and leave your opinion. And when you're there, take a look at the rest of my website. There's some pretty cool stuff there. And then come back to Soundbites, where you can join us in the forums and look at the links. We've got fascinating things on our links, of course. There's our forums, which are wonderful. There's the archive of old shows. You can link to our podcast. 689 people a week are downloading our podcast, including, it's going up, there are now 45 people in New Zealand.
Cool.
45 New Zealanders are listening. Hello, all you Kiwis. If one of you is Peter Jackson, I really want to be in your next movie. Okay, other than that, it's great. We've got people in France and Germany and Denmark and Italy and Mexico and Norway and Canada, and they're all over the place.
We had one person in our squirrel mail account there, the account that when you have a question, you can't get a hold of us on here, kept emailing me and say, you got to get a chat room going. You got to get a chat room going.
Oh, no, not going to happen.
I said, tell you what. Oh, I emailed him back because he went by the name of Whack Job.
Okay.
I said, we do have a chat room. It's called Wham, and we're on every Sunday from 11 to 1.
And you can call in and chat
and
with us.
You can call that number.
We don't need more chat rooms.
Yeah.
His name was Whack Job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's these kids. They like to get it in there, and then they like to get in there and just heckle.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, it's not happening.
No, I don't need that issue, and if you want to submit a question, I answer them.
Right.
And we're here on Sundays.
Well, here's what you tell them, too. Or you accept Visa, MasterCard, check,
right.
or cash
right.
at
if
your
you
shop.
Just, if you want to chat, I'll be happy to chat. It's only $50 an hour, and you can bring your own couch. Also, for those of you who are out there, we have a Soundbites community on Frapper. You can find that in our links. It's the sixth link down.
We're up to 81 people.
And you can put in your city and state and country.
Please
so
do.
So particularly for those of you who are overseas, we'd love to have you sign in on the Frapper account so we know where you are. You can also see Dave's tips. Dave puts his tips in quite regularly, and there's a lot of wonderful ones out there.
We've got a listener that listens into from us from Hawaii.
Bob. Bob.
I wish he'd invite us to, go there and do a show.
What's he thinking? Bob, you need to invite us out. We'll all sit out on the lanai. And
get his local clear channel to invite us out there and do the show from Hawaii.
Perfect. I love the idea. All right.
Florida would be nice. Southern California.
Pretty much
warm spots.
Anywhere warm now. New Zealand anytime. There's 45 of you. Get up a collection. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a sick modem on my hands, and I'm going to give you the symptoms, and perhaps you could help me decide what can be done.
Do you have a hammer? Sorry, go ahead.
777-6377.
Yes,
yeah. Right.
It's a dial-up modem. Normally, when I go online, it'll give me about 48 to 50 kbps,
mm-hmm.
which
right.
is okay for my purposes. Now, over the last month or two, here's what's happened. It's very slow to connect. It takes many rings and attempts to get online in the first place. It finally does, but maybe three or four times longer than normal. That's a minor annoyance. But when I get online, I'm greeted with the earth-shaking supersonic speeds of 24, 21, 16, and even down to 12 kbps.
Yep, yep.
And I never know for sure.
That's not unusual, actually, Bob.
Now, the worst thing of the whole thing is the final symptom, and that is that while I'm online, the modem just stops sending and receiving for maybe 15, 20 seconds at a time, and then kicks in again for just a few seconds, and then, and of course, you're already working at a slower than normal speed, and with that, it takes forever to get even a simple.
There are
file.
A couple of things that can cause this, Bob. One is if you've recently added extra phones into your household.
No.
The second is that there's something actually physically wrong with the line. God knows I get squirrels chewing on my lines all the time, and I have to get them replaced regularly.
Well, our lines, at least in the immediate neighborhood, are all buried. And unless the moles are after them, I don't know.
That's possible. And the third thing would be noise on the line. Are you calling us from a regular phone in your house right now?
Yes, I am. It's a cordless, but I'm on a regular phone line. Yes, the one and only phone line we have.
All right. Well, cordless may be what's causing this problem, but you do have an echo behind you. And if that's happening on the modem line, then that's absolutely what's causing your problem.
Yep.
And that would be in the phone line.
Right. Yeah. And as we mentioned earlier, the phone system has been completely overwhelmed by the number of phone numbers people want for computers and fax
machines
and whatnot.
That's why we had to get a new area code.
And a new area code. So the phone company splits phone lines out. And when we'll run multiple voice calls on a single phone line, which the human brain just fills in all the little gaps and you don't notice that you're sharing your phone line. But a computer modem notices it really bad.
Yes.
So if you happen to be on what they call a slick, where your phone is being shared with all your neighbor's phones, that can really mess up the way the computer is accessing the phone system.
And the problem is if you call the phone company and say you want a clean line, they'll say, okay, for X of dollars a month more, we can guarantee you a clean
phone
line.
The phone company guarantees you a clean voice line, and they've done a sterling, outstanding job of giving us that, despite all the problems with weather in Rochester and the number of phone lines that
have been
requested and everything else. But they don't. Although most people use a modem to get online, they don't guarantee that as part of home voice service.
So really, there's not much you can do with as far as the phone company is concerned.
No, no. If you had one of the other problems, like too many phones on your line, or, you know, check in your basement to make sure that where the line comes into the house, everything is clean, that it hasn't been, you know, it's not corroding or whatever, that sort of fare. But beyond that, there's not much you can do. If you're going to shell out the bucks for a cleaner voice line, you might as well go to DSL and get at least their lower level service, which is not terribly much more expensive.
Yeah, unfortunately, up where I am, at least at the present time, DSL isn't available.
Right.
Let me ask you one other question. When I talk to the good folks at AT&T, which is my ISP.
No, that's another problem. We have a lot of people with the same problems with AT&T since their merger with whoever.
Well,
was
you
it
know
Sprint?
Something, and
was
that
it?
Was just what, a month or two ago?
Yep. And that's when your problem started.
Well, maybe I'll switch ISPs. They suggested that I've got that I need to upgrade the driver for the modem.
Yeah, that's
and trying to find that driver on Dell. My computer's a Dell. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
And their whole phone service thing has changed.
But it should be very easy with Dell. You just type in your service code from the back of the computer, and it points you to exactly the specific drivers that computer needs. There's a 6 or 7 digit service code on the back of Dells and Gateways and whatnot that make it very easy to find the drivers for that model.
Yep.
But really, that's your problem, and that's a lot of people are having that problem right now. That the phone lines just, you know, were never designed for data. They were never designed for data. And while the phone companies are doing a phenomenal job with voice lines, data really should be running over DSL or cable or whatever. So. That's, you know, I don't know what to tell you. There's no solution for that. Our next caller is Fred from Chi-Line, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thank
I have
you.
A question about the Mac.
Yes.
I'm moving data on a thumb drive from a Tangerine iMac G3 running OS 9.2.2 over to a G4. And when I get it over to the G4, the the icons change to font book icons, and I'm unable to open it. Now, sometimes I can command OS X to open it with a particular program, but that doesn't always work.
Yeah, the open with command.
Yes.
Yeah, the problem is you're using a Tangerine G3?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why.
Use
yeah.
Aqua?
You have to use a grape.
If you felt it was important enough to tell us the color, I'm going to tell you that's the problem.
He's one of the very few people that actually bought a Tangerine iMac.
Well, have you gotten an
Him and Syracuse University.
Right.
Yeah. It's likely an interaction between the OS 9 on the old computer and the OS 10 on the new computer. The way it handles file types are slightly different. You can sometimes help that by, heaven forbid, adding the 3-character file extension. And the other issue is that your thumb drive is likely formatted for Windows, since that's how they mostly come formatted, is FAT32. So you're actually transporting Mac files on a Windows disk across operating systems. So you're using three different OSs, OS 9, the FAT32 from Windows, and OS 10, and it's getting confused about what type of file it is. So if you reformat your thumb drive for Mac HFS, or you put the like a .doc for Microsoft Word files or .awk for AppleWorks files, CWK for ClarisWorks or AppleWorks files, then the OS X machine will be able to know what program is supposed to use to open it.
Okay. And you guys recommend anything comparable to AVG for the Mac?
Clamex antivirus, Clamex AV, a free open source antivirus program. They also have Unix versions as well. And it's basically the way to go with for free antiviruses. Very, very good program, been around forever in the Unix world.
All right, and that's we're gonna take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. We've got a bunch of folks on the phone. Me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
From PCs to Macs, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the phones in just a moment. But first, you should know, Sony has a new micro drive out for digital cameras. It's the size of a compact flash 2, those little cards. Yep. It holds 8 gigabytes, and it's a removable hard drive. So for those of us who have digital cameras and are constantly running out of space, if you've got a compact disc slot in it, you can grab them. They say Sony says they're going to retail for $259.99. It'll hold up to generally about 2,500 JPEG images or over 300 minutes of video.
Cool.
It'll be able to transfer files at up to 12 meg per second. So those of you who've been bemoaning the fact that your 256 meg cards can only do 3.5 minutes of video, now you can get 100 times that. If you like, it's a pretty neat deal. Back to the phones. Our next caller is John from nowhere in particular. John, where are you calling from?
Byron.
Byron, New York.
How are you guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, not bad. Quick question. It's a HP Pavilion, older model with ME on it.
Mm-hmm.
And everything crashed.
And a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting an error that reads, window root / systems 32 HAL DLL
mm-hmm.
is missing or corrupt.
Yep.
What does that mean?
You need to get a new operating system.
It means that file is missing or corrupt.
Right. Yeah. A dynamic link library. And what that is a file that's used by other programs to tell what's going on. And the HAL is the hardware access layer. That's the thing that lets programs connect to, for example, flash drives or any piece of hardware.
John, is this been running okay, though, for the past few days?
No, it's been a piece of junk right along. It's the kids' computer, so it's in the other room for them to use.
You know what I would do then? I'd just say the heck with it, put the restore disk in, and start from scratch.
That's my next question. I'm missing the restore disks.
So you many can, people are. It's an HP.
Yeah, you can likely call HP and buy new Restore discs.
Nope,
yeah.
They won't allow it. They don't. They say they don't have them.
It's too old.
It's too old, and too they, old. It's ME. They don't even Microsoft doesn't even make ME.
So now you can buy a new XP Pro disc.
Well, the problem is the HP Pavilion discs, particularly with ME, had specific and special drivers on them, which you can't get off a standard ME disc.
All right, here's one other thing. Do you know some other poor soul that might have ME disc?
We've been looking. We've been searching. We can find a lot of.
See, it can't be the ME disc. It has to be that HP specific.
No. You can get a plain ME disc.
Are you saying no?
Correct. You can put an ME disc in. As much as I love this operating system, you can put the ME disc in and install ME over ME. It'll still keep the HP drivers. All it does is install the OS.
That's true.
It could be something, though, more wrong with the computer. The file could be corrupt or missing because the hard drive is dying.
Right. How old is this machine?
It's about 8 years old.
Eight?
Time for a new computer.
Did you say eight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very likely that the hard drive itself is going.
It's just hosed.
Yeah, it's hosed.
All right. That's the only question I want. If it's worth repairing or, you know, just...
No. What you pay to repair it, you could buy one five times as good.
Yep.
Oh, yeah,
I got to tell you about a client I had.
Thanks a lot, Ed or John. Thank you.
Come in. You want to talk about old? How about a 486?
I don't like to talk about old. Thank you. Oh, okay.
486.
Wow.
Running Windows 3.1.1.
Wow.
And the guy wanted me to get it back up and running so he could give it to somebody. And I was
somebody hated?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
He's got to be ticked off at the person that he's giving somebody a 486, 32 mega memory with Windows 3.11. Sam goes, when was that written?
Yeah.
She doesn't even remember
it. Yeah, she was four
before
when
she was born,
written.
Yeah. Although, speaking of really old computers, we at Jesse Group have been having a basement sale.
Ooh.
Since we moved into our new offices in Victor about 6 months ago, we've been ignoring the basement of our old Menden store.
Yeah.
But now that we're looking to sell that building, we have to clean the basement out.
Yeah.
So if anyone is interested in some historical computers, we have a lot of Apple IIs. We have a lot of Mac Pluses. We have a lot of Mac IIs. So a lot of Macs from the mid and early 80s.
Wait a minute. You folks in the Mac world have to learn to define old computers as doorstops, not vintage machines.
They're historical.
They're not even historical.
I found an Apple II GS limited WAS edition with WAS's signature on it.
Now that's worth something.
Now, yeah.
That goes in my museum next to my Apple III.
Exactly.
So if anyone's interested, give us a call, 924-1920.
Yeah, right.
If someone wants to haul them away, give us a call.
Yeah, right. If somebody just, you know, needs an anchor for their boat, they've got a few Apple IIIs laying around.
Door stops.
I'll tell you, I have an old 486 running at 90 megahertz. It's a laptop. I tore it apart, stuck it in a frame, and now it shows pictures. You know, it's a rotating picture frame. And I'm certain I wouldn't put an operating system on it and try to sell it to anybody. I'm pretty dang sure that wouldn't happen. We should talk about, before we get back to the phones, the Soho Show.
Yeah.
On the 30th.
Yep.
There's the Rochester Small Office, Home Office business show called the Soho Show happening at the Riverside Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be there. Wham is one of the sponsors, and we're going to be there from 11 to 1. So if you want to stop in and say hello, we'll be there from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the 30th of this month at the Soho Show. I think that's it's going to be fun. There's lots of vendors there, lots of good stuff going on. Steve will, if he doesn't die from the from whatever was just going on with him, a little post-nasal drip there.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. We all got it. He'll put up a link to the Soho Show so you'll know what and where and when and how and who. And Soho Rochester. And it'll be pretty nifty, actually.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be a good show. Every year it's a good show. There's a lot of good vendors there. Not all of them are computer-related, but all of them are interesting. And it's about your home office or your small office. So there's some business-oriented stuff. There's some home-oriented stuff. I love to go every year and see all the people I haven't seen in a year, people I've known in the industry for 100 years, and we only ever see each other at the shows.
Well, I caught up with a friend who, since, you know, we've made reconnection, but I hadn't seen him, I bet you, in over 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden run into him at the show that he had left Kodak also. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I had a friend of mine that I only ever saw once a year get sick and tired of that. So I just hired him. He works for me now.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. But it's an interesting show. It's a lot of fun. And, and if you get a chance, stop down during your lunch hour or after work, you'll see the schedule on their site. And, there's a lot of interesting, nifty things going on. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from nowhere in particular. Ed, where are you calling from?
Yeah, hi. I'm calling from Hermitage, New York.
Hermitage, New York?
Yes.
How cool is that?
Where is it?
It's about 10 miles south of Warsaw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Hi, fellas. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I've got a new system. Actually, it's a dual processor and so on.
Ooh.
I'm running a video surveillance system on it at my business.
Mm-hmm.
And as the disk gets full, it makes some more space. And what I'm interested in right now is I got about 185 gig. Is it better to reformat the area? Is it better to just delete it and then try and, go ahead and compact the area? And one of the other options is to take it over to NTFS, and which would work better?
NTFS is certainly better than than FAT32.
Okay.
There's no question of that. In terms of reformatting it or whatever, I don't necessarily know that you need to do that. Is it slowing down or what?
No, it just said it takes about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes to go ahead and defrag the area, because the files are written all different sizes.
Yeah.
It writes about 300 meg an hour.
Yeah, see, if they're all different, I wonder why they would all be different. Are they coming from multiple cameras?
Multiple cameras. The cameras are set up to motion detect before they start up and so on.
Yeah, we've got a similar system in our server room, but all the pictures are the same size, so we never bother to defrag, because if you delete one, the next one fits in the same space.
Go to NTFS, though, definitely.
But going to NTFS will almost entirely alleviate the need to defragment. NTFS is a completely different file system, and defragmenting isn't as necessary, nor does it happen in quite the same way. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely go to NTFS.
Yes.
What operating system are you running?
It's 95 Pro or XP Pro.
XP Pro. You should be running. Anybody running anything from 2000 up should be running NTFS.
Okay. That sounds real good.
There you go.
And by the way, I do have a Windows ME disk sitting in my archives here.
There you go. maybe you need to talk to John.
Go
to the website, our website, soundbites.org.
Go into the forums.
Go into the forums and leave a message for John. And John in Byron, New York, go in and look for Ed from Hermitage. And maybe you guys can get together in some way and get that disc to him. How cool is that?
That's great.
Thanks a lot. All right, our next caller is Charlie from Geneva, New York. Welcome, Charlie. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey there.
Hey, Thunderbird.
Yeah.
I'm having a problem of it loading up. It takes like forever. And when I do load up and hit a new message, I get a blank screen.
All right, how many messages do you have in your system?
Well, if I could get to it, I could clear them out. I have too many, they're telling me.
Yeah, you have too many. There's two things you need to do. One is to clear out, to dump the trash.
Right.
And
second
thing is to compact the folders. That's the big one. As a matter of fact, even if, you don't have to be able to get to the messages, you just need to load Thunderbird.
I've loaded it many times.
No, I mean just start it up. Start up Thunderbird and go to File, Compact Folders. Now, it may take quite a while.
Yeah.
How much free space do you have on your hard drive?
Gobs.
Gobs. Okay. That's the other important thing. But every once in a while, not only should you empty your trash, but you should also compact the folders. You're running IMAP, where the files stay on the other server, most internet service providers don't allow that. But if you're doing that, you don't need to compact. But if you're pulling down the files to your machine, You should regularly, and I mean at least once a day, compact the folders. And that will make sure that, A, you free up a lot of odd space on your machine, and secondly, things will go much, much faster.
Yeah, I've run across customers that have 10,000, 20,000 messages in their in their email, and their email file is 10 or 15 gigabytes.
And a lot of that is empty space because they've deleted files, but left that, unless they compact the folders, that space is left free.
Then their backup program wants to back up that 10 gigabytes every day because it's changed.
Right. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Charlie?
I thought 3,000 was a lot.
No. You're a piker, Charlie. You're a piker.
Well, I keep dumping the stuff. You see, I get rid of it.
Well, there you go. But you got to empty your trash and compact your folders every day.
It's like, why do you need that many?
Really?
You know.
Right. I forget about them,
A lot of us keep a lot of archive stuff.
Yeah, but you can export them and burn them to
CD. I do all that. Yes, absolutely. I don't keep them in my new mail.
Well, no, I know a lot of folks, like Steve was saying, that keep them, and it's like since day one that they had a computer.
At the very least, take all of those and move them to an old mail folder.
Yeah. There you go.
And that way, they'll sit there, but they're not in your way while you're opening mail and stuff like that.
There's things you're meaning to get back to and answer that question.
It's not
so important you have to answer it now, but I'll get back to it later.
Yeah, create a folder called, I know I'll never get back to this, and put all those things in there and just ignore them from now on.
Yeah, but if later hasn't happened in the past 6 months, it probably isn't going to, so delete it.
But that's true, not just of Thunderbird, by the way, but of every mail system. The less stuff you keep, and I should talk, the less stuff you keep in your inbox, the faster your inbox will run. And every time, at least once a day, if you have a compact folders option, or they're given different names by different things, you should definitely compact all your folders.
Now, this is going to make its own folder someplace?
No, you got to create one.
No, compact folder means when you delete a message, it's really still left in your inbox. It's just no longer indexed. Okay. Compacting the folder basically takes all the new messages, all the messages that are still there, saves them to another folder so that there's a lot less of them, and then deletes that big old folder and renames the folder inbox. So what it does is basically removes, pulls out, gets rid of all of those deleted messages that are taking up space in your inbox. That's one reason it takes so long to get to things. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, bunch of people on the phone, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow, Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I want to thank number 10 on on the opinion list on my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Whoever that is has decided that the person who should be running the internet and picking domain names is me. I'd like to thank you, but you must remember I'm an anarchist. that is to say, I believe in rules, but not authority. And so I'd be probably the worst person. We'd have rules, but nobody would be in charge. All right, our next caller is Mark on a cell phone. Mark, you pulled over to the side of the road, right?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Great, thanks. My question pertains to Microsoft Outlook. Is there a way that I could download holidays and things of that sort? I've had a couple instances where everybody remembers Christmas and Thanksgiving, but, you know, Secretary's Day, Boss's Day, things of that sort, I have to manually input those dates because those are important dates if you work in an office. And I'm just wondering, is there a way to download all of that so each year I don't have to do it manually?
Yes, there is. What version of Outlook?
I'm not sure.
All right, if you go to office.microsoft.com, there is I can't possibly for the life of me give you this. We'll put it up on our website.
Go to the tools menu, choose options, choose preferences, choose calendar, choose add holidays.
Right, but that doesn't necessarily pick things like Secretary's Day and stuff. But there is an update for Windows 2000. The easiest way to find it, I can't possibly give you this Microsoft thing. Go to Google and search for Outlook Holidays download.
Outlook Holidays download.
Right.
And if it doesn't have like Secretary's Day and that type of stuff, what you might have to do is set it up once and say that it's a reoccurring.
Repeat every year.
Yeah, every year at this time.
Right, on that particular day. So you may have to input it once. I don't know what's in that holidays calendar, but
quite often. It's just usually the major holidays like Easter and Good Friday and yada yada.
But that's the easiest way to find this thing and to look for it. Okie doke. All righty. There's a lot of them in there, but not all of them. Our next caller is Taylor. Taylor, where are you calling from? Taylor?
Hello?
Hi there. Where are you calling from?
My name's Caleb.
Caleb, I'm sorry. I misread that entirely. Where are you calling from?
I'm riding in the car. I'm calling. We're going to Dick's. But I have a question about if I can put Linux on any computer?
Yes, you can. It depends on what kind of computer as to which version of Linux you should download. There are versions for regular PCs and for Macintoshes and for pretty much everything. But yeah, you can put Windows on Linux on any machine you want. Just like with Windows, if it's an older, slower machine, it'll run slower, but you can certainly run it. What type of machine are you looking at?
I'm not sure, but it's like my family's we're Mac people, and my grandpa gave us a older ME, and it's really bad, so I wanted to do Linux on it.
Yeah, absolutely. One you might want to try is called Ubuntu, UBUNTU, and it's at ubuntulinux.com or And
we'll have a link up on our web page for that. Is.
Right. And that's a good one. You can download and burn a CD and then just set it up. UBUNTU. It's at ubuntu.com. And if you go to the download section, you'll see a whole bunch of different versions for the different operating systems. So there's a 386 version for regular PCs. There's a PowerPC version for Macs. There's an AMD 64 version. You probably want the regular PC Intel x86 install CD. And then you just download that, install it, and you're running Linux. You're on your way.
And if you miss this, again, because I think he said he was in the car going to the store with his dad, you can go back to the archives or download the iPodcast of this and listen to it again and stop it and restart it as you'd like.
And Ubuntu is also listed on our our website in the links to stuff you heard in the show. Caleb, good luck with that. I think you're going to have lots of fun with Linux. It's a nifty toy, and it's a great operating system, and you'll have a lot of fun learning it.
This makes it's kind of an interesting segue. There was a sort of a challenge has been going out into the hacker community to get native Microsoft Windows running on an Intel Mac. There was a $14,000 prize, people who donated money, and someone claimed the prize this week, being able to boot a native Windows XP Pro on an Intel-based Mac.
Yeah, they said they'd done it last week, but until it was verified, he didn't win.
Yeah, and because the Mac is using a new EFI interface instead of BIOS, the way PCs normally work, someone had to hack EFI to accept the BIOS. So it's not trivial and not easy, but they've done it.
Right. Excellent.
So now you can dual boot Mac and Windows on a single box.
Right. Very cool, huh?
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Mike from Lakeville, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My girlfriend's daughter has a Mac. I guess her excuse for owning such a thing is she's an art student.
But you don't have to have an excuse to own a Mac, and I'm surprised I had to be the one to say that.
Well, I was waiting for him to finish his statement.
I'm just kidding around.
I know, me too.
She said that she was going to go out and buy some antivirus software this week, and I said, wait. I said, because of the computer guys on Wham on Sunday morning, I feel I've got the best one, and it's free. I use AVG on my Windows systems. And I tried to put that on her computer. Lord, talk about driving a new car. and it does not download.
No, it shouldn't. AVG is for Windows.
Well, it should download, but it won't install because it's a Windows program.
AVG does not have
a Mac version.
A Mac version, is that correct?
Right, but there is a Mac antivirus software program.
It's called ClamX AV, and they have a free Windows and Linux version called ClamAV. We have links to that on our web link list already.
just so that I can go back. I am driving. Just so I can go back and listen to this or have her listen to it. What is your site again?
Soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Soundbites.org. And we have a list of those things on the website. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, a bunch of people on the phone, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Our next caller is Ernie from Shortsville, New York. Welcome, Ernie. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. Listen to you guys all the time, love the show, even though I never know what you're talking about. You sound like you're talking in a foreign language, but I still enjoy it. You guys know your business.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What I need to know, I'm going on vacation. I need to be able to access my computer at home. And I wonder about a program like PC Anywhere or one of the web-based ones like GoToMyPC.com. Do they work? Are they secure?
Yes, and maybe.
PC Anywhere is, I found, very secure.
Okay.
Because you can set up, open up a port, and you can put a password on it and make the password very obscure. Like,
okay.
Nick was saying, always letters and numbers.
Yeah,
and
don't make it like your name or any. Make it long and hard.
Okay. I've got a perfect password that I can use, but it's like 19 digits long.
Good. Excellent.
Well, another question.
It'll accept some password that long then.
Sure, they will.
Another question, though, is
more than like go to my PC.
I would prefer that. I don't know enough yet about GoToMyPC to know what's going on. But in general, anytime something goes through somebody else's machine, you got to be a little suspicious until you know what's going on in that other machine.
It's a subscription service, so you pay for it every month. But its main advantage is it works through firewalls without needing to be reconfigured if like in a company, if you don't have control of the firewall. It uses a web port 80. The other question to think of is do you actually need to access your entire computer, or do you just want to be able to check your new mail while you're away, which is what people commonly do?
Well, I need to be able to use a program on my computer that uses a special modem. Where I'm staying, I have high-speed internet capability, but I need to use this old slow 1200 baud modem next to my security equipment out in the field.
Yeah, so then you would need that. For most people, when they go on vacation, if you just want to check up on your mail, you can use some of the web mail services.
Now, you're going to have two separate network connections, right? You're going to have some sort of broadband or whatever and this old slow modem on your home machine, right?
Right, so that's what I'm trying to use.
Okay, then you can do that. PC Anywhere is probably your best bet at this point. PC Anywhere is probably your best bet.
Similar,
I'd say go for it.
Similar program, Timbuktu from Notopia does the same sort of thing.
On the Macs.
Or cross-platform, Mac, Windows, or both simultaneously.
Nice.
Or you can use the free VNC. That's probably not as secure as you'd want it to be.
Well, VNC is supposed to be super secure, but you never know. All right, our next caller is Kent from Webster, New York. Welcome, Kent. What's your question?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. Quick question for you. I've got a wide area network, and I'm looking for a mail server to provide service for mail clients. I'm thinking about First Class or a Surge or Pegasus. Any recommendations?
Those are all good. You can also brew your own under Linux using any one of a dozen programs, which are incredibly robust and easy to set up. But those all work, too. Pegasus is a pretty good system, a nice server. Eudora also makes a good one. Any of those would be fine. You're going to need to dedicate a machine to it. And one of the important things is whatever you pick, make sure that you can attach to it antivirus software so that everything that comes in or goes out gets scrubbed before it moves on.
That's why I like suggesting using Jerry.
Jerry, use Jerry.
CCS, I mean, just
CLSS.
CLSS. Is just let somebody else handle it. One, you don't then have to maintain a machine. You don't have to worry about the virus scanning and everything else. If you turn that over to some other company, like Jerry, it's so much cheaper And you, it's in less
term,
headaches.
Especially in terms of your time and effort.
That, yes.
You know, when your mail server goes down at 2 a.m., you don't have to run over to it and fix it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
they have people to do that.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, you have full control on setting up clients and everything else, passwords and yada, right. yada, yada. It's,
but if you are going to set it up for yourself, any one of those works, I would suggest not using a Windows machine.
Stay away from Exchange. It's one of the big problems with Exchange is it's expensive.
It's very expensive. Yeah. But even with the others, anytime you've got a Windows machine facing the net, I worry.
Yeah.
I worry because they're easy to break into. We run Linux and we're using Procmail and XM and Clam AV and it's magnificent. It's fast. It's easy. We've got stuff that goes in and it comes in and goes out, gets scrubbed. It's all good. So you have a lot of choices, Kent, but I would suggest that you be very, very careful as to which one of those you use. Well, looks to me I can hear by the music in the background and Rob throwing things at the window that we're done for another week. I want to thank all of you who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Next week, call in earlier. Back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Mina Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.